Welcome in to the Other Football Podcast. Chris Chapman, Thomas Viola, Carson A. Merck rolling with you here on Thursday, April the 30th. And I only know that because it's my mother-in-law's birthday. Otherwise, I probably would not know. Another episode of Zoom. We got Carson out in Henderson, TV up in Tahoe. I'm here in Vegas. We're being joined by former U.S. national team player, former player in the MLS, among other places. Marvell Wynn joins us from Quincy, Illinois. So how you doing, Marvell?
I'm doing very well, Chris. How are you guys doing today?
Not too bad. Now, I'll get started here. And when I looked up your bio, you know, we hear a lot about military brats, but you were a baseball brat, which really isn't a term that we hear a whole lot of, right? Your dad was a Major League Baseball player. I also know that he played for my favorite Japanese league team, Hanshin Tigers. I'm actually a Hanshin jersey when I saw it. I got to represent Hanshin. So long-suffering Hanshin Tigers. But so what was that like as a kid kind of bouncing around a little bit? Because I know you were in Pittsburgh, San Diego, and then Osaka as well.
You know, it was interesting because for me, it was normal. I mean, when we would have to move to a different place, they'd be like, ooh, we're going to another house. Like getting up and moving was a part of life. It was just something that we did. And I was, you know, super young. So when we first moved from Pittsburgh over to San Diego, there wasn't much of a loss for me. And then after there, my dad played for Chicago for a little bit, but we didn't move there with him. You know, they have a lot of free time, so he would come back and visit. And then in Japan, I lived out there for, I think, 6 months or so, and their toys were amazing. I love that. But one thing that I'll never let my mom live down was that we actually stayed in Kobe, Japan, where, of course, Kobe beef is from. But my mom had this thing where we could only eat meat well done. So I to this day, it's the only thing. Like, Mom, I love you, but we had well done Kobe beef while in Kobe.
Oh, that's a sin.
I love you so much. I know. And it hurts every time I have to think about it, but you know, it's all good.
Yes. Like, I'm lucky. My wife is actually Japanese, and I was over in Yokohama in January, and we went to a yakiniku place where it's like 5 grade or whatever, however they grade it. It's like the highest grade. Mm-hmm. This was actually in Tokyo, and it was like as rare could be. They just sear it on the little grill, but oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. So you definitely missed out a little bit there. But what made you decide to not pursue a baseball career like your father and kind of blaze your own trail and go into soccer?
So baseball was around me my entire life, but I was first introduced to playing soccer when I was 3. I was actually going to go watch one of my friends play little indoor soccer. They were a man down. My mom volunteered me to play. I got on, I started running around and started kicking the ball. I had a lot of energy. So she was like, oh, this is great. Oh, this is good. You need to do this all the time and never stop. So I started getting into that team. Then I tried getting to other teams and I just wanted to keep playing and keep playing. And then it truly became, truly part of my life. Like it was one of those where, you know, what are you going to do today? It's like, well, I have soccer tomorrow, so I guess I'll sit around and study today or something, and, you know, whatever. It was just soccer was my highlight of my daily routine, weekly routine. It was what I loved and what felt for the most. And then my dad tried introducing baseball to me, throwing the ball in the backyard, getting me onto certain teams, and snooze. I just couldn't do it. And not to mention, when I was in little minor leagues, you know, they'd always try to get me to steal. I was fast, right? So you run. But like minor league, you know, hit the ball off the tee, fine. Minors, little soft pitch, go. Then like majors came along and they have this thing called a curveball in baseball. Absolutely not. It looks like it's going to your head and just drops. I'm out.
now listeners can't see it because we're on Zoom, but as you were describing that, you were doing the signs to steal bases and swinging the bat in your hands, but pretty funny stuff.
Literally the first time I ever played catch with my dad with a hard baseball, he hit me in the mouth and my mouth bled. Like I can remember the hose having to wash the blood out. So that's definitely and then curveballs as well. And as far as kind of choosing soccer over baseball, not the craziest thing. I like baseball, but what really, when you got into soccer, were you like, I can play this legitimately in college as a professional?
You know, that truly never really hit me until it was I forget what the actual day is, but there's a certain day for high schoolers that colleges are allowed to contact you. It's like from then on, like, so like that very day, I remember getting a bunch of letters in the mail, and in my head, I was like, what is all this? What's going on? Like, I can go to the next level. Cause to me, it was just, I loved playing. All I did was focus on playing. Like, the night before a game, I would go to bed thinking about playing the next day because it would lull me to sleep. It was a happy place for me. Then all of a sudden it came up to like, oh, you can actually take this further. You can do this or do that. So I started having to change my mentality around that time versus I'm going to go out and play and have fun to, oh, wait, I should probably be really focusing and taking this seriously because this could get me places. And I didn't want to say that took the love out of it at all because, you know, you love it throughout, but that was definitely a time. So around 17, 18 was when I actually started thinking, oh, wow, this would actually take me places. I better start concentrating and really focusing.
So you legitimately had no idea that there were college scouts that were watching you and interested in you. Like you just had no idea that those letters were going to be coming?
Not that amount. You know, when I was playing for, I think, Surf and Hotspurs at the time, if you would say we're going to a college showcase or an invitational, and it was, to me, that was just other tournaments. I would go out, I would play, because in the end, that's honestly the best, in my head, the best way to go about it is just say, I'm going to play my game. If you're going out there to play, to impress, you might try doing things that's out of your comfort zone and you might mess it up and you might look kind of off. You're not going to be you. So when I would go out there and I would just play with just disregarding everything else. And I think my mom and my parents had a lot to do with that as well, because my dad would say, look, if you are going to be seen, they're coming to see you. You've gotten on the radar for a reason. They're coming to see you for a reason. So why switch it up? Why try to change it? Just do what you do. And by the way, if you do all this fancy stuff and you pull it off and they finally get you to the team, they can cut you too. So you might as well just stick to what you're good at.
Now, you had a pretty good career in MLS. You played for four different clubs, San Jose, obviously, Colorado, Toronto, and New York, New Jersey, although we call it New Jersey because they play in New Jersey. But did you have a favorite city or favorite place? Because I know you played in some really cool places. I mean, Santa Fe is really cool. New York is really cool. Toronto, obviously, one of the most cosmopolitan cities in North America. Denver, just a great city all around. So did you have a favorite of the four that maybe you played in?
It's tough to say. So definitely not when I played in Jersey. No offense, but I lived in Kearney in Tony Miola's wife's cousin's basement, which apparently Tim Howard used to live there and a few of other players. So I lived in her basement. The best thing about it was Pizza Land, which was right up the street. Yeah. So I'd go there for Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what everybody would tell me. So I was like, all right, let's go check this place out. And it was solid. You know, there's like one guy back there. The pizza was amazing. And the joke around the town was it only tastes so good and salty because his sweat would drip into the dough and then you just eat it. And it just,
I believe it.
Because it was super salty, but it was really good. Toronto was amazing for like that age. I think I was there 19 to 22, 19 to 23. It has a great nightlife, and we just got there, so everybody was really hyped. So you'd walk down the street, and they're a nice little Canadian. So it's like, oh, Marvel Winner, so great to see you. I just wanted to say thank you, have a good day, and like run away. You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, can I have an autograph? Can I, you know, sit and talk with them? They just didn't want to bother you. They'd be happy. So that was a lot of fun. Then Denver came along, and it was just a whole different atmosphere. Like, it wasn't the club going out nightlife. It was more so the hang out at bars, go to a couple games, and enjoy yourself kind of more adult-like. And then San Jose was fun for the whole experience, like working, like going to Avaya Stadium, getting trained on the pitch, and being there for that, like the opening season there and all that. I had a lot of fun in every city I went to, so it's really difficult to say which one I liked the most. They all had their benefits, you know what I mean? But in terms of just the most fun, between Toronto and Denver, I mean, I might get the leg up to Toronto, but I mean, Denver's just so great.
And you won a title. You won a title with Colorado, correct?
I won a title with Colorado in Toronto the year I was traded, and that head coach got fired, Preki. So it was a great year. It was such a good year.
Just pure anarchy.
Yeah.
So some MLS players don't really get notoriety in the video game world, as you know, they won't really have the same ratings as some of the players over in Europe. You're the complete opposite of that story. Where was there a point when you realized, hey, wait a second, these kids that play FIFA actually know me, even if they don't follow MLS at all, because you happen to be a FIFA Ultimate Team legend.
Yeah. So that only occurred to me when I started being more active on Instagram. I would be on there, I'd do a couple different things, or someone would make a post about, you know, a FUT Ultimate Team, and they'd have me on there, just these gold, some silver, and then just a bronze Mars right there, but just a center back with like 96 speed. So they're like, dude. So once that came along, I was like, okay, well, this is actually kind of known, but I still see more posts and more posts. So it's actually, it hasn't fully hit me. I just kind of laugh, think it's amazing, repost it, and just kind of enjoy it. But
so which one of your
I have been aware.
Which one of your family members works at EA Sports?
See, I'm not gonna say. It's a confidential.
Yeah, that's fair.
I signed an NDA.
you were a complete cheat code in the game. Like, I would use my friends and I would have tournaments all the time. We would take this stuff so seriously. We would have like group stages. There was a whiteboard. There was a pot drawing to like see who'd be in which group. Oh yeah, we were high schoolers. We had nothing but time on our hands, and so I would always be one of the top seeds. So I would have to play with one of the lower teams, and I would always be like, all right, well, I'm going with the Quakes because number one, Wando, and number two, Marvell is the only defender of the three-star teams that can chase down all of the five-star strikers. So, of course, I'm going to be them. You were the best.
You know what? You're welcome. I'm glad I could do that for you. Just if I really had someone working at EA that was a family member, those are the ones that say, oh, I put you up top and you scored a great goal. I was like, okay, wait. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I ran somebody down. From a while back, I got the ball and I just passed it 5 yards to somebody else. If you're telling me I'm shooting upper 90s, I don't trust you.
Now, you played on the U.S. men's national team that took second in the Confederations Cup, which, I mean, I remember that tournament. I think you guys beat Egypt, I think, and then you beat Italy in the semifinals, which was pretty incredible. And then you had a 2-0 lead up on Brazil, which, you know, in and of itself was just a tremendous accomplishment. But what was that experience like for you? I mean, to go to South Africa the year before the World Cup, be part of that team, really, it would probably make the argument the most successful squad in the history of the U.S. men's national team. Just what was that experience like?
Kind of crazy. Wasn't it Spain?
Oh, it was Spain. I think that's right. Yeah, I think it was Spain.
Because I remember Spain because they were on some crazy streak of not losing. And like,
yeah, they were the World Cup champs, I think.
Yeah, they were going nuts. That whole experience was kind of mind-blowing because it was one of my first experiences with the national team. I mean, to go away for tournaments, I think I went to there was a Confederations Cups, and then I went to I think a Copa, but oh my, I was all nerves the entire time. Like, it doesn't matter because like when we were there in Peoria, going up to our floor, there's a guy sitting there in a chair with a machine gun just sitting there making sure nothing comes into our rooms, no one robs us or anything like that. But the training facilities were great. Every time we traveled, we'd have, you know, like a decoy bus in front of us or behind us, again, followed by, you know, police officers and all that stuff. It was extremely surreal. And then being in a situation where watching us beat Spain and then going 2 up against Brazil, it was one of those, you know, don't breathe, don't talk, just we were witnessing something amazing here. And then Brazil did Brazil things, but in the end it was like, yo, we did something kind of amazing.
Yeah,
and it was, honestly, it was just all kind of mind-blowing and just surreal. It's hard to really put into words about, you know, the daily interactions or how players were in general. You have some experienced guys that were there just kind of like, you know, another routine one, whereas some of the younger guys or guys haven't been there as often or have their experience was, you know, they were more nervous, just kind of like, you know, don't want to mess up their game or get into their heads. Just I'm just gonna, you know, be me, be quiet, train one after train, do my workouts, make sure I take care of myself. But I mean, everybody else is doing the same, so you got to respect that.
Now, the first time that I met you, it was actually when I was an intern at Kron News, and that's the only reason that I remember this little detail. I had to find the B-roll that they wanted to use for your interview that day. And they were like, just go and try and find some highlights for them. And I'm like, all right, I can do that. And I go on YouTube. And one of the videos I come across is you absolutely destroying Ronaldo back when you were on Toronto. When you, I think you were like 19 at the time. Do you remember that?
Do I remember that?
Yeah.
He's like, no.
No, that was nothing.
Yes, I remember that one time. I like having this story brought up because there are definitely two sides to it. So I usually start off with the negative part, whereas during that game, Cristiano Ronaldo poster boarded me so hard. I have the magazine somewhere in my house, but during that game, there was like a goal kick or whatever. I'm setting up. I'm in position to head the ball. As I'm getting ready to jump up, he comes across me, heads the ball, and he's so high that my hands are up by my face, and it just looks like I'm grabbing full tush, just getting some of that Cristiano Ronaldo all in my hands. And what happens is he flicks it, and I'm pretty sure he goes around and they score from it. But you just get the picture of just me and him just above me, which is just humbling to say the least. But then, second half, he thinks he's big stuff. Cristiano Ronaldo, whatever. Tries kicking the ball by me, runs outside the field to try to run around me. No. So, I mean, I got to the ball before him with some time to spare. So, I mean, in the end, he's an amazing soccer player, one of the greats, still not faster than me.
And it was that moment that you became an ultimate team legend.
Yes.
They didn't see the first half. They just saw the second half.
That's all they saw. Just everyone just shocked.
So, I know we got to let you go here in a few minutes, but one question that we really wanted to get to, of course, involves your retirement from MLS and how that was, first of all, obviously a very unfortunate thing. I know that you had the diagnosis with a heart issue, and then really you didn't have a normal retirement by any means because there was a lot of drama going on at the end there with you're coming back, then you're not coming back. And for those that don't know, I mean, normal logic would say, oh, well, why isn't San Jose paying his contract? But then people don't realize that the entire league pays the contracts. Like MLS itself mm-hmm. pays the players, not the teams themselves. And so that brought a lot of confusion for people. Would you mind walking through kind of the saga that was 2017, 2018 for you?
Sure. All right. So yeah, MLS is a single entity organization, whereas MLS just, they run everything. They're big brother. If there's going to be a trade between two clubs, both the clubs could agree to it. And MLS could say, no, we don't like that trade because they don't think it's good for this one team or another. They have all the rights. They do all the big stuff. So what happened to me was for the entrance physical coming into 2017, we do EKGs along with a lot of body assessment type things. And my EKG came back funny. I'm not exactly sure of the terminology, but when they put the electrodes on, the appropriate angle that they're supposed to fire is supposed to be at a downward, 45 degree angle or so. And the year before, mine came back 9 degrees different than what it should have been. And in 2017, it just came back the complete opposite direction. So in their head, they just sparked up a little bit of concern. So me, along with two other players, went to go get extra screening, MRIs, CT scans, and they found out that I had an enlarged aortic root. And that's pretty much, where the aorta hits the valve and, it goes into the heart. And from there, they took me to see a cardiologist up at Stanford. And they were saying, well, we usually don't like doing any types of surgeries until it's about 5 centimeters dilated. Right now, yours is about 4.4 to 4.8. So in the end, you could live a very happy, very fit life. It's just we would not really clear you to do this at a professional level. If you decide to not have surgery, we're gonna have to check up on you every year. And odds are you're going to have surgery maybe in your 40s, 50s, or somehow. But this is eventually, it's not going to get better. So, you're going to have to go that way. Or you can offer surgery now and we can get you back on the field and you can work out as much as you want, do your thing. I pretty much treated it like it was a hamstring injury. I said, okay, so my heart's a little injured, going to go for recovery for a couple months and I'll be fine. That's exactly what I did. Went in for it, got their surgery. I believe from the day of the surgery to me being back in the locker room, walking on a treadmill for an hour was about 6 days. I just really wanted to get back and keep going. And in doing this, I was still getting paid by MLS. I had just signed a new contract for 2 years. So to take care of 17 and 18, just signed it. But one of the stipulations in it was, if he clears an entrance physical. So MLS kept, and then like before going in, obviously I asked them, so will I still get paid if I go through the surgery? Da, da, da. And they said, we will honor your contract, but we do want to get a doctor's diagnosis after the fact just to make sure. And I said, okay. So 6 months into it, so I think June or July, they just stopped paying me. No warnings, no anything, just I'm not getting paid anymore. We contact them. They say, well, you haven't been cleared yet and all this other stuff. But in my head, I'm like, why are you not paying me now when I'm getting better? Like at this point, 6 months out, or I think 3 months after my actual surgery, but 6 months into the year, I was running. I was super fit. You know, every injured player says, I'm coming back and I'm more fit than ever. It's because all you do is focus on fitness. Like there was no ball. It was just me running, me doing like push-ups, body weight stuff, just getting as fit as possible. And I didn't really understand what they're going for. Like, well, you haven't been cleared by a doctor, this, all that. I said, all right, fine. I'm going to go to a doctor. So I go to their doctor, and their doctor says, we're a little concerned about the swelling where the actual surgery was performed. The organic tissue and the artificial material may not blend together as well as we want it to. So I'm a little worried. So my cardiologist, my doctor say, you're perfectly fine. Theirs says, I'm not sure. MLS doesn't like it. We go to get a third opinion at Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic apparently puts my case in front of a panel of doctors anonymously. They say this is a 31-year-old African-American. Should this person play professional sports? And unanimously, they said no, because they're doctors, and why would they ever sign off on something that isn't 100%? Basically saying, is this person at 100% no non-risk? No, I'm not. I had a surgery. It could be the best surgery ever, which I believe it was. There's nothing wrong at all. But because I had the surgery, was enough to disqualify me to playing in their eyes. And after that, MLS said, you know, well, that's that. We're not paying you. That's the end of it. So the next couple of months, I went pretty dark in my head. You know, I was pretty depressed. Clinically depressed, actually. You know, the doctor, you know, they wanted to give me, you know, medications and things. But in the end, I was like, I think I'll get out of this, because at the time I wasn't going to get any type of disability and MLS wasn't paying me. I just kind of would have been kind of dead in the water, so to speak, and just nothing going on. But around February, so people were saying, look, man, the thing is, you had a great career and you never took a vacation or relax or time to hang out. Maybe this is your opportunity. You can't go back. They're not going to take you back. So go ahead and enjoy what you got. So once I finally came to grips with that, which again took 3 or 4 months, I decided to, you know, make a little video and, you know, officially retire. Because at the time it was just kind of up in the air, and I recorded at home. I was at the stadium working out, and do you remember Ricky?
Yeah, I think. I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, Ricky's the one that retired me, basically, because I had the video in my hand. And I was like, I don't want to press this button. Ricky, you're going to have to retire me. Just press send. And he did it. And he's the one that put it out there.
Wow.
Right, Marvell, we know you got to go. So we ask every guest we have on the show one question, but I'm going to actually preface it with something else. You played in New Jersey. You lived there for a little bit. I'm going to assume you've had a pork roll, egg and cheese sandwich. So are you on the pork roll side of it, or are you on the Taylor ham side of it? And then your go-to French fry.
Nick LaBrocca asked me the same exact question. I think I'm going to Taylor ham side.
Let's go!
I think I'm going Taylor ham side, yeah.
And then your go-to fast food French fry.
From what establishment?
Yeah.
You guys are Jersey. I know you're gonna get mad, but you know what I'm thinking. I'm a Californian. You know what I'm thinking.
Oh, we've had.
You guys want me to say White Castle? I'm just curious.
No.
Okay. Please no. No, please don't.
I think I gotta go. I think McDonald's is the same. I get In-N-Out is legit, but I think McDonald's is just reigning supreme on fries. I really do.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, that's a really good French fry. I mean, I like the In-N-Out, but I feel like you have to dress it up a little bit with the animal style.
Mm-hmm. That's how I get my burgers, that cheese and the grilled onions.
Oh, yeah.
If you had said White Castle, we were deleting the entire episode. Yeah. It was never would have aired. Never.
Get out of here.
All right, Mario. Well, we appreciate the time. Best of luck in the future endeavors. And, you know, thanks again for popping on with us. We greatly appreciate it.
Of course. This is great, guys. Hope you guys have a good one. Stay safe.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. That was Marvell Wynn, former U.S. men's national team player, of course, multiple-time player, one-time champion in MLS with us, and really cool for him to pop on with us for a little bit. Again, the Other Football Podcast, you can catch us multiple places, LV Sports Network, Stitcher, Spotify, Cast, iTunes, BGN.FM. Shout out to Roughneck Scarves. Yeah, yeah.
I'm updating the French fry list right now.
Yeah, that was, you know,
he is the third person that said McDonald's.
Hey, you know, and he's on TV's side when it comes to pork roll. So
yeah, so I'm a huge fan.
We're fairly even, and you know, one of the things that we've discussed in the last couple of days is we're gonna try to get some more guests on, because I think Zoom really gives us the opportunity to kind of do that. But I think I'm gonna get someone or reach out and try to get someone who's gonna go on my side of that debate. But
Chris is trying to stack the deck here.
Of course, yeah. I gotta put the odds in my – this is Vegas, man. I got to have the odds in my favor, so.
It's Tretch.
I have to say, though, that, like, just coming out of that interview right now, that was the best interview we've had on the show, I think.
The story was incredible. I mean, it's obviously a real unfortunate situation, right?
Yeah.
Anytime an athlete has their career cut short due to – injury or, you know, something internally that doesn't allow them to continue, it sucks, right? Because the one thing we always hear from professional athletes, it doesn't matter what sport you're playing, whether it's soccer, baseball, basketball, I mean, I hear it all the time from professional hockey players, when it's gone, you miss it every single day. And it's not like us, right? We get up, we do our job. I mean, these guys they're ultra competitive, they're amazing athletes, and obviously, Marvell, one of those just unbelievable, maybe one of the best athletes to ever play for the U.S. men's national team, and good bloodlines as well, as his father was a professional athlete for, you know, quite a few years in the majors. So,
and by the way, Marvell still runs marathons. Like, the dude still keeps it going as an athlete.
Oh, I mean, if the listeners could see, like, we could see it from the Zoom, just what incredible shape he was in.
Yeah.
Like, he was clearly still in tip-top shape. I mean, he looks like he could go out and play still.
Can you imagine if he had said White Castle was his favorite fast food
from Oh, God.
Have you ever had White Castle and not felt at least a little sick afterwards?
I have never had White Castle.
That's something that I'm like, I wouldn't even suggest that you try it. Like, even if you don't get sick afterwards, like, you eat White Castle, your stomach's at least a little bit like...
Yeah, well, we used to call them belly bombers.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, they're the only
quality when you're drunk, by the way.
They're the only fast food business that sells their burgers. One of your options for purchase is a suitcase.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can also get them frozen at Walmart and other places like that. So, I mean, so yeah, they're
just not good microwave, by the way.
No, so we had
– I hate that Chris knows that. Like, I had little respect for this man before, but even that is gone now.
Well, I haven't bought them in a really, really long time. I mean, I got to go back to, like, the first time I was a bachelor, which was like 20 years ago when I was buying frozen burgers. But my uncle used to bring them home because for some reason he liked them. And, you know, they were a good thing to just – you buy a dozen of them and you could eat half a dozen or the whole dozen while you're watching a basketball game on a Tuesday night. But
well, we had another place back home that was called Hamburger Station that sold sliders. And – It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. I think it was maybe a little quality was a little better than White Castle. And there was one time me, Drew, and Dare were driving home from playing basketball or something and picked up, you know, you get them the same way, like a 12-pack or whatever it was. And we get back to the apartment, and I'm eating one, and I'm like, something just tastes weird. Like, I thought, like, I had washed my hands afterwards. So I'm like, is it soap? Like, did I just leave a little soap residue? So I'm like, I'm eating one. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. This isn't good. So I tried to eat another one and it tastes the same. And all three of us are like, yeah, something's off. The onions were skunked.
Oh.
And you can't salvage them. Like, there was no picking onions off. Like, the whole thing went straight in the dumpster. Like, I was like, did I leave, like, too much soap on my hands? Because it had such a nasty taste to it. And it was skunked.
Man. So
the three places that I will never in my life eat. Two of them, I'm sure you guys will be okay with. One of them, I'm sure I'm going to meet some resistance here. But White Castle.
Fair.
In my life, I have never and never will be thinking Arby's.
I'm an Arby's guy, but
I'm not really an Arby's guy. Yeah,
and I refuse to eat Taco Bell.
Oh, come on, man.
Come on.
Because back when I was a kid, Taco Bell had that E. coli scare all up and down the East Coast.
Oh.
And I was just like, nope, I'll eat Chipotle. I don't care if Chipotle gives me E. coli.
Do you eat Jack in the Box? Because Jack in the Box had something similar in the 90s too.
There's a Jack in the Box.
People legitimately died.
Jack in the Box is legitimately the closest fast food place to my house because, like, there is one. You know how there's one.
Hey, yeah, Durango.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. I won't eat there either. That is definitely another one.
I hear that Greek restaurant across the street from you is really good, but I haven't been there.
I haven't been there either, but, like, the reality is if I'm eating very close to my house, I'm going to Sushi Koma. Shout out to Sushi Koma, friend of the show.
Naked Fishes is by you too, and that's really good. I think Naked Fishes was actually one of our local businesses of the day.
Did you say so Naked Sushi Chicken?
Naked Fish.
I think I've seen it.
It's a bit crude and vulgar, but fair.
No, it's sushi. It's Naked Fish.
Yeah. There's a good wing place right up the street from us at the studio called Wing Kings.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah, that place is good.
All right. This is the other local.
Yeah, the other local eatery
it
podcast.
It is always the other local eatery podcast.
Yeah, out local eateries. But
we have two fat guys on the show. What do you expect?
Hey, I've lost a bit of weight during quarantine.
I know you were just telling us before we got on air here that you had just gotten done with a 5-mile walk today.
Yeah, I'm down probably 15 pounds since the last time you guys saw me.
Wow, that's big for you. So
I'm staying strong.
So you guys have to see this because I had a mishap the other day.
You ripped your shirt again?
Huh? No.
Okay.
But if you can see, I don't know if you can see with the camera.
All I see is your nipples, and I'm happy about that.
It is all red. I am a lobster right now because I decided the weather's finally warming up here in Tahoe. So I was like, all right, I'm going to sit out on the deck for a little bit. And just, I wasn't even out there that long. I was out there under an hour, but roasted.
He did the butter shave.
Yeah.
Stick a fork in it, Jerry. I'm done.
I got to show you guys the tan line from the watch.
Nice. I was so sure Chris was also going to show his nipples and I was going to call somebody. I was going to call the FCC or something.
At least we know that Chris is wearing pants this week. Yeah. Last week he was not.
No.
I did not know that last week, but I'm glad that I didn't know that.
When he got I noticed when he got up to silence his son on the oboe, I just realized, like, we're talking to Jordan Morrell, and I just realized Chris is not wearing pants.
I was wearing pants.
You were not wearing pants.
Wasn't there somebody on, like, Good Morning America this week that didn't have pants on?
After, yes.
Yeah, that's not good.
So a lot going on.
Yeah, there's finally news again.
Yeah, so a couple leagues have completely finished their season. Holland, Belgium, they are donezo, not coming back. France, they were it's bizarre because I guess it was on Monday, the league was talking about players returning to practice and they wanted to start back up in June. And then we get the news, I guess it was yesterday or Tuesday, I can't remember which day,
that
their prime minister basically came out and said, nope, you're not in this season. League is done, canceled. However, did not void the season. Now, they were supposed to meet in May to discuss what the decisions were as far as playing and what they were going to do. And they actually already decided. It's good news for me, I think, because now there's a precedent. But PSG, who only had a 12-point lead in the league, they were awarded the championship, the league title. Two clubs relegated, Amiens and Toulouse. And I don't know a whole lot about Toulouse. Unfortunately, the club, I know a little bit about the city. I know it's where Airbus, the airplane company, is headquartered in Toulouse. And I also know it's about an hour drive from Barcelona.
Apparently they play Toulouse.
Yeah, well, they back and forth. And I know purple only because whenever I pick a team in France, I always go go buy them because they're awful. But Amiens was actually a really cool story because a couple years ago they came up and they scored a stoppage time winner in the final game of the season to gain promotion to Ligue 1 for the very first time in their history. Well, now they're going back down. I don't know who's promoted. I haven't looked that deep into it, but I know they listed or they picked the Champions League team. I guess it's the top four teams. And someone, I believe it's Lyon, are suing because they were in fifth place and they actually get the short end of the stick. So it's and then I had also read that there's some teams in Holland that are suing as well because they had a two-way tie for first and only goal differential separated. I think it was Feyenoord and Ajax. No champion awarded there yet.
By the way, Feyenoord, the team that I am using in the EUSL Championship League that we're playing.
I feel like I know none of us really are, we've mentioned before, are like the sue for whatever reason type.
Yeah. But some of this is there's a lot of money on the line.
There's a lot of money, but also I feel like I understand that side of it. Like money rules the world, cash rules everything around me. But it also is like it's a pandemic and nobody, there's not like a guideline. So it's not like one of the federations is like, ah, F these guys. Like, let's just end the season. Like, they're having to make very difficult decisions, so I feel like to sue is to indicate they, like, willfully shafted you, and I feel like nobody is being willfully shafted. It's just a matter of trying to figure out how to best handle a global pandemic. I think it's tough.
Yeah, I kind of take a different approach to that because there's so much at stake here for these clubs. I mean, a lot of it's survival for these clubs, and – you know, not getting that television revenue or not gaining promotion, you know, from a business standpoint, that could set you back many, many years, right? Like I look at Leeds, and nobody here supports Leeds. We like their manager, right?
I was going to say, you're damn right we support Leeds.
But, you know, like they were in position to gain promotion, right? Like they weren't, I believe it was them and maybe West Brom. I can't remember who was second in the championship. But for Leeds, they haven't been in the Premier League in like 15 years. Who knows? They may lose players because they don't gain promotion. They may lose sponsorship deals. They're going to lose TV money, right? Because you can watch Championship on ESPN Plus. I'm sure you can watch Championship in England on whatever channel they're on there. So, yeah, there are no rules for the pandemic, but there's also a lot at stake money-wise and for the fitness and the survival of some of these smaller clubs. Like, I know
Burnley said that they're going to go under.
Yeah. So, and I don't foresee the English government bailing out Burnley. You know, someone said, oh, well, maybe the bigger clubs could bail out some of the smaller clubs. And I'm like, well, that's not really fair either because some of the bigger clubs are going to lose. Like, I have the list, and I know I sent you guys the link, and I'll just go through the top four. But Man United, I think, was going to lose the most amount of money between television revenue, match day revenue, and retail revenue. They're going to lose £116 million. That's not dollars. Pounds. That's like $150 million.
Yeah, but the difference is that this is the one place where – like, sports are the one place where socialism works. And you look at it with the way the NFL works, how it's a system of 32 teams that all buy into this federation. And
revenue sharing.
Yeah, they share the revenue. The big clubs can – they like, even Manchester United, they can stand losing $150 million this year. It sucks, but they can weather it.
Yeah, but
the small clubs aren't going to be able to handle this. And – at the end of the day, some of it's going to have to come down to some of it's going to have to come down to the value of the game. And the reality is the Premier League as an entity should be able to say, well, because they've certainly got extra cash lying around.
They probably do. Yeah. But as a league, when you're going to lose, I mean, your top four clubs alone are going to lose over $420 million or pounds, you know, close to $500 million. I mean, that's a pretty substantial hit. And I mean, and even some of the mid-level clubs like Wolves and Newcastle, like Wolves is going to lose 50 million pounds. I mean, Wolves, they're only 2 years up in the Premier League, right? And they were still alive in Europe. That's probably over for them. So they're going to lose that revenue.
We're going to gain like 500 million though. So we're good.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Not everyone's
Newcastle's about to become the newest oil club.
They're going to be City.
Newcastle City.
Yeah, Newcastle City. Next thing you'll see, Aguero playing for Newcastle.
We talked about it briefly, but not to dive into that, but it is funny. All the players, like this week, the latest is like Nabil Fekir.
Yeah,
from Pedro. Like every elite player is just, they're all linked. They're all coming.
Oh,
you guys are the Miami FC of Europe.
Yeah,
that's not a
good thing. That it's gonna be interesting. But yeah, it's just every league and every club is in a tough spot. So I feel like, and I understand what you were saying, Chris. But I guess my mind or my interpretation of suing or like going to litigation is somebody did something wrong on purpose. That's just where my mind goes.
Yeah, but my guess is I don't think it ever gets to that point.
Yeah,
I think the we're going to sue is to come up with a better
solution.
The problem is in Holland, I think you have a group of clubs. In France right now, you only have one club. So they're not going to win, right? Where in Holland, you have a group of clubs who have kind of banded together. I guess it's like a class action, right? That would probably be the best way to describe it. But I feel like that's done to promote change.
Yeah.
Like, look, you have to figure out a system where you declare champions, you determine promotion and relegation. I mean, I'm one of those people who says, you know what? Let's compromise here. If you're going to void the season, you finish it, you rule it based on who's in what position, and then you bring up two clubs from Championship, whoever they are, based on points. You have no relegation in the Premier League this year. But the problem is the Burnley situation, right? Like for Burnley, it sounds like it would be better for them to finish the season and even be relegated. It would be better than not finishing the season, even if it ended in them being relegated. So
yeah, because at least they get the revenue. Yeah, I mean, part of that is I think if you're going to make a system, first off, somebody is going to get shafted at some point. Most likely, the champions. You can kind of say, look, the season's relatively null and void. Like if there's two teams that are tied for the title, like obviously Holland, you've got the goal differential tiebreaker, but that's not enough when you have this many games that were left in the season. Guess what? This year you have co-champions. They both won it because
like City and Liverpool.
Yeah, it's a weird season. Obviously, you have to give. Really, with the Premier League, you can't really get out of the title. City. Yeah. City won it. We all knew it was happening.
Yeah.
But what you might have to do is freeze relegation, but keep promotion. The teams that were going to get promoted, like the teams that were on track, still get promoted. If you were in fourth, sorry, like. Not everybody is going to win.
They have a playoff, right? Third through sixth, they're in a playoff. Yeah. And the winner of that playoff, they play at Wembley, and then they move up, right? But
So then you can go with the two teams and freeze relegation and then just expand relegation by one team the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, I think maybe the compromise would be next year you relegate five.
Yeah.
That would be intense.
Well, how about the relegation battle? Now here's an interesting aspect.
But you could also just relegate. You could relegate four for 2 years.
Yeah,
you could do that. That might be a little better of a way.
Yeah, might stave off the blow for some of these clubs financially. Now, I'm one who believes you can't start next if you don't finish this season. You can't start next season, right? Like you can't just say this season never happened, and we're going to start.
Sure, you can.
And no,
like this Premier League season didn't happen. None of us this is like Reggie Bush's Heisman. It doesn't exist.
Well, listen, we all know Reggie Bush won the Heisman. He was the best player in college football.
Not from what I recall.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, the thing is we're gonna get a sense, because I feel like Spain, they're gearing up to say, hey, look, we need sports, right? Like, we need to bring the people something positive, something for them to watch. And we're kind of getting that in here in the U.S. as well.
Like, yeah, I know sports are starting to come back.
The NHL has kind of hinted at the fact that they're willing to finish this season and determine a champion no matter how long it takes. They've even said as much as, now this is hearsay or rumor, but generally where there's smoke, there's fire. They'd be willing to push the start of next season back into December or even January, and then schedule in ways to determine this year's champion. I feel like there's
really the summer of 2021 is going to be lit for sports.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have the Olympics as well.
And Euro 2020.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we're going to have the Olympics, the Euros, and the fall and winter sports going all the way through.
And the 2020 Champions League final and the 2021 Champions League final.
The biggest problem with delaying sports, though, is going to be, like, if you start the season in December, you're going to have to truncate the season. You still have to end it around May, because eventually you have to get back on schedule.
Yeah, it catches up, right? But I feel like at least if you say, all right, like, let's say in England and Spain and France and Italy, for example, they say, all right, you know, well, Italy, they've pretty much said, we're not finishing anything this year. So I think we'll exclude them. The big three are England, Germany, and Spain. And I feel like all three will return. I'm not sure all three will finish, right? Because there's pushback in Germany from medical experts and scientists. And I've seen some pushback from even fans on Twitter in England saying, hey, you know, you're going to test all these players multiple times a week. Well, what about the people who can't get tested, who are just the common people, right? So you're going to have that pushback as well.
Well, the good news is that testing is a lot more widely available now than it was when everything started. Because
thank God for that, right?
Yeah, mostly because tests are finally going through the FDA.
And here in Southern Nevada, it seems like we're seeing that decline. And you know, for Las Vegas, where the three of us are all based, it's good. It's good news, right? But unfortunately, we're kind of like in the same boat as some of these sports leagues. Like, all right, well, we can do stuff, but we can't have fans, right? We can't have people coming to Vegas because we don't know if they're sick or not. So, you know, unfortunately, we're kind of in limbo as well. Even though things are okay here, we're still waiting for everyone else.
I did see Las Vegas locally, who, for those that don't know, is a Twitter account here in Las Vegas, obviously, that is really, really
– that?
No one knows. Like, it's run by a mysterious entity.
Is it V for Vendetta?
Yes.
Pretty much. But it's really tuned in. Like, normally it beats news organizations to scoops. And they were saying today that the idea to finish out the NBA season in Las Vegas is picking up a lot of steam.
Yeah, I mean, and we certainly have the hotel space, right?
Yeah, and the arena space.
And we have, I mean, they could play basketball games at T-Mobile, Thomas and Mack, Mandalay Bay Event Center, MGM Grand Garden.
South Point.
I mean, there's not going to be fans.
Yeah.
So where you play, you could play at the Cox Arena. I mean, I'm sure there's probably another facility.
You can really play anywhere that has a basketball court.
Yeah, I mean, you could play at Valley High School if you want.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
The Orleans Arena is another one.
Right. The Orleans Arena is beautiful.
I like the Orleans Arena.
Yeah, you know, the outdoor court I play in at Southern Highlands.
Yeah, you could play it at Sunset Park, right?
I like a tilted rim.
Yeah. Oh wait, I think the one that's missing the net.
Yeah.
Or the ones that have like the metal nets.
Oh, I am fully in favor of playing out the rest of the season with chain nets.
Yeah. There is nothing worse than double rims. Whoever invented a double rim can go to hell if they're not Seriously. Already there.
So what are your predictions, right? Like I've said that I feel like we're going to see England, Spain, and Germany return at some point.
So I disagree.
No,
I don't think, because you look at it, it's looking increasingly in Europe when you look at all these other leagues that are simply not coming back. It's looking like the debate is more, do we declare the season null and void or do we declare a champion? Because some leagues have just said season is void. Some leagues have said this is our team that's the champion.
Now, but we should preface by saying none of those leagues have the massive television contracts.
None of them do. But you look at the pushback that Germany got for restarting. We're coming up on what the end of the season would be anyway. Like, we're coming up on May now. Tomorrow.
It's going to be May.
Yep.
Yeah, May 1st, tomorrow.
But you're coming up on what would be the end of these seasons anyway. Maybe they do something over the summer, but then the problem is you're stuck with what do you do for the fall season, which, by the way, we still don't know if that's going to happen. Like, that's the scary part here. We don't know, because we're probably going to see a resurgence of cases in the fall.
Well, let's hope not, but it seems like that's probably. Yeah. Now, the good news, I guess we can look at the other side of the world, right? Like, Taiwan is playing professional baseball. They play professional basketball. They're almost at the point where they may even start allowing fans back in baseball games in Taiwan, because I've obviously, having lived there, I've got a lot of friends there. I follow a lot of the news there. The Korean Baseball League is starting up, I think, next week. And the Korean Soccer League is going to be restarting very soon as well. By the way, we talked about it last week, and I sent you the link. The name of the team. I can't remember who are the
Ilsan Hyundai.
Ilsan Hyundai.
And I drive a Hyundai, so shout out to the Sonata.
The big rivals of Pohang Steelers, who are a pretty successful club. But so I guess at some point we'll be talking K-League soccer. And not sure about the J-League yet. There were some inclinations that maybe in June, but it's a big few weeks right now in Japan, because they have what they call Golden Week, which is basically like their version of spring break, but everything shuts down, right? It's not just kids get out of school. Like, a lot of businesses close for the week. So it's a heavy time where people travel, and the Constitution does not allow the Prime Minister to lock down the country like a lot of these other places. So, you know, their Prime Minister Abe, he can't force people to stay home. So I know they've closed beaches in some places, and, you know, they've had a resurgence of some cases in Hokkaido. Numbers in Tokyo seem to be declining, which is obviously a good sign, but doesn't really do you any good if they're declining in other places or increasing other cities. So, but obviously one to watch. We're big fans of the J-League, so hopefully they get that squared away and they start up soon as well. But
I can't believe they're going to do a CGI fans reportedly in some of the – I think it was in England. Soccer Goose said that he wasn't a fan of the Tupac – or he was hoping they would all be Tupac holograms, which that was so weird when they did that Tupac hologram. And I feel like somebody thought that was such a good idea. Right? Yeah, it was at Coachella. I feel like somebody thought that was a dynamite idea, and then everyone was like, wow, that was really strange.
Did you guys see the Kentucky governor?
No.
Yes,
So this week
– Yeah, go ahead, TV.
This week, the Kentucky governor came out, and he made a small speech about how people need to, like, take this seriously and stop burdening the unemployment system with fraudulent claims. And he points out, like, one claim, this guy puts his name down as Tupac Shakur. Like, come on, guys, you can't do this. Like, it's preventing us from getting people the money, even though Nevada's system is just don't give you any of the money. But that's beside the point. Turns out there is – so the next day he does another speech, and he just goes, so apparently we have a citizen in Kentucky named Tupac Shakur, and that was his real name.
Everyone always thought Tupac was still alive. They just didn't think to check Kentucky.
In Kentucky, he was part of Nappy Roots.
But credit to the governor, he came out and he was like, yep, that's on me. I called the guy. I apologized. He was very nice about it. I appreciate that from him. But
that's pretty funny.
The guy answered with a Hail Mary, come with me.
And some brilliant news writer said, apparently the guy thought it was no biggie.
Oh.
Not bad, not bad.
That's I wish I had the didn't. So we should probably wrap it up. Other football podcasts, a lot of places you can catch us. We're working on guests, hopefully some more guests. I know Carson's got some interviews lined up, and we'll bang those out and get them up for you as well. And
we had
a good one on Monday.
Monday or Tuesday. It was Maya Watford, who is
not to be confused with Watford FC.
Yeah, no, very true. Yeah, she's
not heir to the Watford fortune.
No, she had kind of a weird
this year.
Yeah, she had kind of a weird journey of she got an offer to play in Iceland and took the offer and went there, and then this whole thing like shut everything down. So she's never even been out of the country before. And so this is kind of wild. Like,
wait, is she in Iceland still?
Yeah, she's in Iceland.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And she knows John Morant, so shout out to John Morant.
That's pretty awesome.
Former Murray State star, yeah.
Yeah, so they're both at Murray State.
She played at Murray State.
Yeah, she's the third all-time leading scorer. So, yeah, definitely check that out. We had some good laughs, and I have a couple good ones coming up. And one slight tease, the interview I'm conducting tomorrow is with Bradley Bourgeois, who plays for FC Tulsa. The fun fact about him, not only is he a quality guy, his fiance is the daughter of Gary Talent, who is in the E Street Band.
Oh, wow. No
way. Yeah. That's awesome.
New Jersey connection.
Yeah, so I'll try to mix in some Bruce Springsteen questions.
See if we can't get Bruce on the show.
Yes.
I think he's definitely a pork roll guy.
No, he's – poor. Oh. Wait, where is he from again?
He grew up down the shore.
Yeah, you're right.
He's from Freehold. I think he grew up in Freehold, but now
he's going to be a pork roll guy.
Yeah, he's, you know, all his time in Asbury Park, and he has some songs about Lakewood, and so.
I've told that story about how I didn't meet him, right?
How you didn't meet him?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I didn't either. So.
No. Oh man! So my family has a cursed history with Bruce Springsteen.
Uh oh.
My mother, when she was like 17 or 18, she did one of those like call into the radio contest, guess the lyrics, and you get tickets to the concert. And it was Bruce. And she was like, oh, I'm going to win this. And she's calling and calling. And she eventually gets through, and she's like caller 17 or whatever it was. And she gets on. And they're like, congratulations. Okay, here you go. Here's the song. We're going to stop it. And you just guess the next lyrics and you're good to go. And it's Thunder Road. And it gets to the point, hide beneath your covers and study your pain. And then the music stops and she goes, make crosses with your lovers, throw roses in the rain. And they're like, yes, congratulations. You have won. Click. And the phone line disconnected.
Oh,
no. And she was like, no, no. And she calls back and she gets through again. And she's like, it was me. I was that caller. And this was way before caller ID. So they had no way to prove it. And they're like, we're sorry. We can't do anything. To this day, she's never been to see Bruce in concert.
Ooh.
But a long time ago when we still lived in Jersey, we were down the shore one time. And we were sitting on the beach and I'd fallen asleep in a beach chair. And I wake up and there's this whole crowd of people like 100 yards down the beach from us. And I just look and I'm like, oh, what's going on over there? And my mom goes, oh, Bruce Springsteen just walked by. And I go, you didn't wake me up. So the curse has been passed from one generation to the next now.
I have a follow-up question. I could be completely off on this. Is there like a divide between Billy Joel and Bruce Springsteen? Like, I associate those two in my head. Is there any rivalry at all?
I don't know if there's a rivalry, yeah. But Bruce Springsteen is definitely New Jersey, and Billy Joel is definitely New York.
Like, so who do you prefer of those two?
Oh, I'm from New Jersey, so obviously Bruce Springsteen.
TV? I got Billy Joel all day, so we didn't start the fire?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Billy. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong.
The fire is Billy Joel's best song. That's probably not a ringing endorsement for Billy Joel, because that's probably not one of his best songs.
No, it is not his best song, but Billy Joel
is my genre of choice, damn it. That's a good song.
You know what, though? A funny story about Billy Joel. So my son was born on November 21st. That's his birthday. Now, 3 days before his mom went into labor, we went to go see Billy Joel at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. We were in the third row. My son was rocking the whole time. She kept saying, he's kicking, he's doing all sorts of stuff. He wasn't due for another 3.5 weeks. 3 days later, he's like, you know what? I'm ready. So I told him, I said, you're lucky we didn't name you Billy Joel. But, you know, yeah. So,
I saw him in concert. Great show. Really still
good.
Got it.
Really, really good.
Yeah. All right. You know what? Hang on 1 second. I got to take a poll real quick in the household. I'll be right back.
What? What is this? The guy goes away.
I like it.
I'm looking at an empty chair.
So is this Billy Joel, what are his number one? Piano Man?
Yeah, which I'm not really a fan of.
I'm not a big Piano Man guy.
Played so much, right? Like people, like whenever you go to one of those piano bars,
yeah,
you always hear it like 4 times. It's like
I put Piano Man up there with like Don't Stop Believing by Journey. That's just wildly overplayed, especially at karaoke. Like it's guaranteed to be sang at both places. Yeah.
I like Moving Out. I think that's what it's called. Anthony, is it Anthony?
All right, I'm back, and my suspicions are confirmed. Bruce, more Southern, although granted, all of New Jersey does accept him as an icon. But after a very quick, very scientific poll of the household, Billy North Jersey, especially because we're so much closer to New York, Billy Joel does.
Yes.
Although I do know someone from Long Island who will pick Bruce every day of the week and twice on Sunday over Billy Joel. So,
and then the one no one talks
about, creating a rivalry.
And then the one no one talks about is Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi is the Atletico Madrid to their Farsons.
Boo.
Like when I was a kid, Bon Jovi was really popular, but I don't really listen to Bon Jovi. I mean, I like him. I mean, I don't dislike him, but one of the crazy stories about Bon Jovi, when he played T-Mobile Arena, I guess it would now be 2 years ago. You've never been in T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas. What a magenta.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
True.
Right? Like that's T-Mobile's color. So there's a lot of magenta all over the place. There was a hockey game the night before he played. They had to cover up everything in the building that was magenta because apparently Bon Jovi hates the color pink. And the color magenta, and he apparently refused to play.
Oh my word!
I don't know if it's accurate. I was told that by someone who works security at T-Mobile Arena, but I'm like, well, you know, there was the story about Van Halen, how with the M&Ms, right?
Oh, see, every Van Halen story, I'm inclined to believe.
Yeah, well, and they said they came out years later. They said it wasn't that they disliked. I think it was the brown ones. They all taste the same. It was they just wanted to see if these people paid attention to the list that they gave them before the concert. So
yeah, some musicians will explain like they purposely make some requests on their riders just because they feel pressured, like they feel like they have something to live up to, so they need to put something weird on the rider. Do
you think when they were covering the pink, they said when they got halfway done, they said, "Hey, we're halfway there."
Oh, good.
By the way, I saw Bon Jovi at the Shark Tank. Dude played like 5 encores. Very long show. Very great show.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty good concerts. I mean, I've been pretty lucky. The last big concert I went to was Paul McCartney about a year ago.
Nice.
Boo. And,
Liverpool guy.
How are you going to boom Paul McCartney?
He's a poor man's Michael McDonald.
Oh, my God. Get out of here. You're off the show. You're done.
Michael McDonald must be from Eastern Ohio.
Where Mike McDonald's from, other than heaven.
No, he's still alive.
No, I'm saying he's from heaven.
Oh,
guy's got a voice of an angel.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think he was actually on the episode of What's Happening, which is a show I know you guys absolutely don't remember.
Nice.
I highly suggest checking out What's Happening because it was one of my favorite shows when I was a kid. It was with Raj and Rerun. And what was the sister's name? Dee was the sister. But anyway, that's going to do it for us, other football podcasts. Maybe next week we'll give you our rock star demands, the most ridiculous thing we could come up with. But
I like that idea. Yeah. Thank you so much to Marvell Wynn for giving us some time today for an awesome interview. We really appreciate him being on. If you haven't listened to it, go back to last week's episode where we had Jordan Morrell, Las Vegas Lights defensive back. He was another awesome guest. We've been really lucky with the guests that we've had lately, and we plan on continuing that. We have some other exciting names coming down the pipeline. Obviously, we don't want to talk about anything before we have it booked, but I promise you it's going to get even better from here. There are a couple names where I'm like really excited to share.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're able to deliver, and you know, we're really looking forward to some of the stuff that we're working on, and you know, we're just trying to provide some entertainment and, you know, keep it real during really unprecedented times. And you know, I was telling my son the other day, I was like, you know what, dude, you'll never see anything like this again in your lifetime.
Hopefully not. Yeah, that's what we were told after the 2008 crash.
Well, that's a lot different than this.
It's a lot different than this, but I mean, you're Carson in my generation.
Well, my generation too. I mean, because I was fresh out of college.
Yeah, your generation sees some nuts stuff. You were not fresh out of college in 2008. You were fresh out of college in 1908. But thank you guys so much for listening today. Be sure to give us a like, give us a subscribe, share, give us a nice rating, preferably a 5-star rating. If you want to give us a 1-star rating, just go rate someone else's podcast.
If you're gonna rate us a 1, don't rate us at all.
If you're gonna rate us a 1, just berate Chris Chapman on Twitter at Magnum702. Meanwhile, Carson and I, if you want to give us some good shout outs, we're at Carson A. Merck and at TV at Work. And of course, where can you find the show, Carson?
At Other F-Ball Pod, and then streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, BGN.FM. Shout out to Roughneck Scarves, Pocket Cast, iHeartMedia.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week.
Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you then.